This podcast is intended for investment professionals only. Hello and welcome to LGIM Talks. As 2021 draws to a close, here on the pod, we're thinking about what might lie ahead for investors in 2022. So we're going to be bringing you several outlooks, including those for fixed income, equities, credit, and the outlook for inflation. Do listen out for those if you've got time. Today, we're focusing on the area of real assets, by which we mean real estate, infrastructure, and private credit. We'll be chatting through the drivers behind the asset class and how they could be affected by just some of the themes likely to dominate in the new year. In short, the post-pandemic recovery, the thorny issue of inflation, and how the built environment will continue to embrace environmental, social, and governance factors. So for this podcast, I'm delighted to be joined by Rob Martin, Director of Strategy and ESG, and Lushan Sun, Private Credit Research Manager. Rob, Lushan, welcome to LGIM Talks.
Hi, Francis.
Hello.
Hi to you both. Rob, shall we start with you for a bit of scene setting, if we may? Before we talk about the themes for 2022, it does seem, doesn't it, as though investors are increasingly paying attention to private market assets. Why do you think that is?
Yeah, I agree. There's a number of things going on here that are pulling investors towards private markets and pushing them to seek complementary exposures to their public assets. So first and foremost, you have to talk about the squeeze on returns and yields in the market. 10 years ago, you could create a very simple basket of global stocks and bonds and get a 5% yield on that. Well, nowadays that's more like 3%. So investors need every lever they can find to maximize their risk-adjusted returns. And it's encouraged them to look at growing their exposure to a range of private market strategies. And there's also, you know, some things going on in the public markets themselves. So over the last 10 years or so, the top five issuers in the MSCI World Index have broadly tripled their weight from 5% up to 14%. And they're all tech firms. So markets are increasingly driven by a narrower set of mature mega corporations. And it's driven a search for additional ways of diversifying the investment risk that comes with that. And then there's, of course, the other side of the coin around growth. There's quite a bit of evidence now that IPO activity has slowed, and actually the characteristics of firms that are coming to the market has changed, and they are increasingly mature businesses. So actually a lot of the growth that used to take place in public markets is actually starting to take place in private markets, and investors want to have access to that. And then, of course, you know, we can't not talk about ESG and impact. You know, private assets, in particular real estate and infrastructure, have a huge part to play in decarbonization. And there is a degree of control that comes with private markets that really allows investors to align their investments with their ESG objectives. So we've got a few things there, you know, really driving behavior. And if you bring it all together, it's driven a ninefold increase in AUM for private assets versus a threefold increase for the public markets over the past 20 years.
That's extraordinary growth, isn't it? And thank you for setting the scene there, because there's some really interesting factors there. So should we go on to 2022, Lushan? And look, you know, I mean, the human tragedy aside, the pandemic's thrown up new ways of how we work and how we live. Give us a flavour, if you will, of how these new trends are being reflected in real assets.
So if I start with a general observation, we're seeing that companies nowadays are increasingly shifting their focus from cost cutting, which was a priority during the pandemic, now towards business investment and capital expenditure. So we quite often at Real Assets look at the Deloitte CFO survey, which is a good report in the industry on general corporate sentiment. The latest report that was published in Q3 this year showed that there was the highest proportion of CFOs in the survey that said that their priority was to look at capital expenditure, particularly in technology. What does that mean for us in terms of real assets and private credit in particular? Well, corporates are going to probably need some financing to meet those business investment costs. So they'll probably turn to the public credit market. But also, we are also seeing lots of firms coming to the private credit market for those kind of financing. So we believe that really supports a healthy pipeline of opportunities for private credit investors over the next couple of years. But onto the pandemic more generally, we are, you know, hopefully, fingers crossed, get a bit more return to life as normal as and when the threat of the pandemic further recedes. So what does that mean? We might see further recovery in sectors that have been really impacted over the last couple of years. We're talking retail, leisure, and travel, etc. But what we've got to be really mindful of is that recovery is vulnerable to any further restrictions, as we're already witnessing in mainland Europe in the last couple of weeks. You mentioned new trends, and some of them emerging from the last couple of years are most definitely here to stay. I will talk about a couple of them in the next couple of minutes. So the first one, hybrid working, the idea of people splitting their time between working from home and working in the office. That has sparked huge debate in the real estate industry around the role of the office. What does the future of the office look like for different companies? What we might see in that sector is a polarization in office sector, where really high quality, attractive, modern offices might get quite strong demand from corporates because they think that will be very effective in getting people back into the office. And those weaker assets, not as nice in secondary locations, will end up being not getting much attention at all. So that's definitely a trend we think might emerge in the next couple of years. The other thing I want to talk about is the growth of e-commerce, the idea of online shopping. I'm sure everybody listening to this podcast have done a lot more online shopping over the last couple of years than they had previously. I've got an interesting stat for you here. Online food shopping increased by 94% in the UK since the pandemic began. That's quite a lot of Ocado deliveries. So what that has led to is really strong real estate, industrial real estate performance in the last couple of years, during what has actually been a quite lackluster market condition for real estate overall. So we do expect online shopping growth to continue in the next couple of years. You know, pandemic might be over, people might be going back to the shops, but people still shop online. And so that probably still mean quite strong demand for industrial real estate. But given the super, super good returns we've had over the last couple of years, we are expecting that growth to slow somewhat and investors to be a bit more selective in what they invest in. But some sectors are still really attractive, things like last mile urban logistics, where we still see very good demand.
Thanks, Lucian. That's a very comprehensive overview. And just turning to your first point that you made there about companies shifting their focus from cost cutting to business investment. Hurrah, but governments are too, aren't they, in this build back better theme that we've got going from UK governments, US and European and the European Union. Now, so Rob, I mean, obviously the next question I'm going to ask on the back of that infrastructure programme is, what are the implications of the asset class then on that huge infrastructure programme in your view?
Yeah, I mean, pretty massive is the answer. There is going to be a wave of asset creation, and this is going to roll over decades, frankly, but it starts, you know, today, and it has been going on for several years, to decarbonize in particular energy and transport. It's now pretty well understood that we need to scale up the amount of renewable energy generation that we've got. So solar and wind are very well established now. We also know about the electric vehicle rollout that needs to take place. We must also think about rail electrification and decarbonizing other parts of transport as well. And there's a whole series of investments that need to be made in the wider infrastructure space as well. So as these intermittent renewables, particularly wind and solar, become a bigger part of the electricity supply, we need to grow the capacity to store that energy so that it's available when it's required. And so there's an increasing need for investment in things like batteries, and increasingly people are talking about hydrogen and even ammonia as stores of energy to sit alongside that new renewable capacity. So the other area to talk about is manufacturing. And there's a whole range of products which have a carbon content that needs to be reduced as we move towards net zero. Some of the areas that we think about, particularly from a real estate and infrastructure perspective, is steel and concrete. In combination, they account for something like 40% of the carbon emissions associated with construction. And there's a real need to innovate in that space to reduce the carbon content in those products as we move towards net zero. Now, given the really constrained public finance position, you know, the majority of the capital for that is going to come from the private sector. And there's a very wide spectrum of risk and return here. So for wind and solar, those are relatively proven technologies and quite well understood. Battery storage, hydrogen is relatively more embryonic. And then you've got areas such as some of the things I talked around steel and cement, which might be more, you know, frankly, the realms of venture capital. So there's a huge pipeline of investments. What we have to do is to focus on aligning those assets with investors' risk and return objectives.
That's really, really interesting. It's almost like, so what you're saying is with some of these new technologies, we are in uncharted territory, effectively, and it's an evolving process, that's for sure. Okay, thanks for that, Rob. All right, should we just now turn to something that's not quite so interesting, the thorny issue of inflation. I mean, the chair of the US Federal Reserve, Jay Powell, said the other day, didn't he, that we shouldn't use the word temporary to describe inflation anymore. So against that background then, Rob, do real estate and infrastructure, do they provide a good inflation protection in your view?
Yeah, inflation is very much back as a topic, isn't it? Probably in a way that I haven't seen for, you know, a number of years. A lot of investors do think about real assets, real estate and infrastructure as providing a buffer to inflation. And that is true, but there is quite a lot of variation within the asset classes. And there are certain parts that deliver a better link to inflation than others. And we tend to think about it in two parts. There is contractual inflation linkage, and then there's inflation linkage, which is based on pricing power. So if we look at the first area first, the direct linkage, there are certainly parts of the universe. Long income property is a good example. We also see this in parts of the regulated utility space and social infrastructure, which have a contractual link to inflation. So there's really quite a direct hedge there. There is then a wider group of assets which have pricing power. And that's really based on a healthy balance of supply and demand. And that creates the ability for the asset owner to pass inflation onto the end user. And one of the areas that we're heavily engaged in at the moment is build to rent residential. And that's a really good example of a space which has robust demand and restrictions on supply that do provide that buffer to inflation. So the short answer is yes, real assets can provide inflation hedging, but it needs to be targeted intentionally and it needs to be based on assets which have some specific hedging characteristics.
Okay, and that's interesting about the pricing power and what you said there, because that seems to me to be the key. But Lushan, there are cost pressures, obviously, in the built environment, and they are more problematic. So maybe you talk us through some of those.
Absolutely, Frances. So inflation can present quite a risk when it comes to construction side of real estate and infrastructure. We're already seeing the impact of the rise in price costs, the rise in raw materials, labor shortages, and really coming through in construction in those assets. For example, the most recently published L&S Construction Price Index show that pricing for construction and raw materials has gone up by more than 20% just since the start of 2021. So that's really a quite big jump, and it will have huge implications for financials of new developments. So if you think about when we assess the individual viability of new developments, new projects, it's really crucial that we stress test those financial numbers to make sure that they can withstand any further shocks in supply chain disruption, labor shortage, cost of raw materials, et cetera, et cetera. But there are good news as well, particularly for private credit investors. So private credit investors do actually finance the manufacturing of lots of things like trains, buses, or infrastructure projects. In those kind of loan deals, it's quite typical to have protections built in the agreement, so that where there is a construction delay, which could be a result of price inflation, the lender is well protected. by a variety of different means. So that's really quite good for those kind of private credit investors. It provides a lot more resilience, a lot more insulation from the impact of price inflation we just talked about.
Okay, the message is there, the devil's in the detail, I suppose. Should we just turn to, actually last month, gosh, it seems a long way away, but it was only last month that COP26 was held in Glasgow and has really focused investors' minds. I mean, we've been talking a lot about ESG all year, but November really focused investors' minds onto how net zero is reached. So obviously, the obvious question I have to ask you is, how will the theme of sustainability affect real asset investors in your view? It's already impacted them, but going forward into next year, what are the themes that you will be focusing on?
So on a long-term basis, we strongly believe that the transition to net zero presents the greatest investment opportunities in our generation. If you think about it, Francis, to get to net zero by 2050, we need to make huge changes to the way we live, the way we eat, the way we travel, the way we stay warm or stay cold in the summer, I guess, on those rare days in the UK. So we're talking a huge number of sectors that need to do a lot of work to decarbonize, and that means the sheer amount of financing required will lead to a lot and lots and lots of opportunities for investors with a long-term horizon. But for those that own physical assets, which we do at Algeria Real Assets, we really need to get our assets up to a high environmental standard if you want to meet the net zero target. So we take real estate as an example. That industry really needs a multi-decade retrofitting program so we can really improve the energy efficiency and reduce the carbon intensity of all the buildings that we own. That program can't start in 5-10 years time. That program has to start now. The industry needs to, you know, start acting today, and it will cost hundreds of billions of pounds. We're talking lots and lots of capital required here.
Who's going to foot the bill of that cost? Because, you know, you talk about it being an investment opportunity, but there are huge costs involved. So who picks up the bill?
So the bill for asset will have to be picked up by the asset owners in the first instance, and they're likely to require additional support, either in the form of government grants, subsidies, or from external investors providing financing or providing equity injections. So it will be a combination of all those different sources. But, you know, we can't just think about costs on a standalone basis. There are genuine tangible benefits from doing this. So we are already seeing premiums on buildings that are deemed to be better environmental qualities compared to those that are not. I'll give you a good example. We recently saw some research that suggested that central London offices that have the highest environmental credentials can attract a rental premium of as much as 12% against those of equal, similar built quality, but less green buildings, if you like. But what else can investors do apart from, you know, retrofitting the assets already? I think it's important that investors are also owners of capital. You know, pension schemes in the UK, for example, have trillions and trillions and trillions of pounds of assets they can deploy. So one thing they could do is direct those capital to solution providers. So here at Elgin, this year alone, we have financed providers of elderly healthcare, heat pumps, and fiber optic broadband to underserved areas, amongst many other similar deals. And there's lots of new areas we're looking at which we could deploy capital in the future, including hydrogen, sustainable agriculture, and carbon capture.
There's a lot to digest there. And obviously, I take your point about the polarization between best and the rest, if you like. Rob, can we just end this on a slightly sobering note? We try not to here on the pod, but as we record this, you know, the Omicron variant has reared its head. Just sum up your thoughts for us there, please.
I think the most obvious risk is that more stringent restrictions on activity need to be reimposed, and that might slow the pace of economic recovery in 2022. That again could create more disruption. It could create more inflation, which just reinforces the need to consider how to use private markets as a hedging tool. But look, more broadly, I wouldn't see it fundamentally changing our view. We're a long-term asset class, and we're sort of We know that we have to deal with bumps in the road, but we are sort of looking beyond that, seeing, you know, what the long-term prognosis is. And I think that remains the same, sort of irrespective of what happens over the next several months, which is that we do see a growing role for private market allocations in helping investors achieve their long-term objectives. And that's both financial, but also around environmental and social impact.
Okay, well, that's a good note to end on. I mean, the one takeaway for me is that the whole of the real assets industry is undergoing profound change, A, either because it has to, or B, because it's, you know, because it's driving change and driving all these exciting new technologies. And I think that's a really exciting point on which to end. Rob, Lushan, thank you so much for your insights, and thank you all for listening. Thank you. If you've enjoyed listening to this podcast, you can leave us a rating, or maybe even a review if you're feeling particularly generous, on the Apple Podcast app. It really helps new listeners to find us, and we're always on the lookout for new ways we can improve. As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals only and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. This podcast should not be taken as an invitation to deal in legal and general investments. Any views expressed during this recording belong to the individuals and are based on market conditions at the time of the recording and do not reflect the views of Legal and General Investment Management. Forward-looking statements are, by their nature, subject to significant risks and uncertainties and are based on internal forecasts and assumptions and should not be relied upon. Where individual stocks are mentioned, these do not constitute a recommendation to buy or sell any security and are for illustrative purposes only. Legal and General Investment Management is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. To find more great content, check us out on Twitter, LinkedIn, and our website, LGIM.com.